Cheerscast is part of the Fire and Water Network.
Recent research into the Revolutionary War indicates that the defenders of this area were not called the Minutemen after all.
Oh, like every history book is then wrong, right?
Oh, they were actually called the Minute Men. A lot of them under 3 feet tall, as a matter of fact. Way back in history, people were shorter.
All right, fine.
Take, for example, the Knights of the Round Table.
Yeah.
Genuine midgets.
You're a very lonely man, aren't you?
Hello and welcome back to Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and casting off with me for a romantic weekend at sea is the host of Is It Jaws and other shows on the True Freaks Network. Please welcome back to Cheerscast, Mr. Paul Spataro. How's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for inviting me on again. I always enjoy doing the Cheerscast, even when we don't do good episodes.
Well, no spoilers. No, I mean, no.
Hopefully. No, this, you know, I'll spoil. This is not a bad episode.
This is a fun one. There's a lot about this one that I like. So,
we were just talking before we were recording how there's kind of an up and down on my episodes. But, you know, as we've said in the past, even a not stellar episode of Cheers is usually pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't sell it short, because I think there's a lot more that's fun about this one. So
I agree.
Season 6, episode 16, Yacht of Fools. This one is written by Fief Sutton, directed by Thomas LaFaro. Again, this is another episode in a string not directed by James Burrows. And I finally had the wherewithal to look it up. And the only thing that I noticed about this timeline was in 1988, and the original air date for this episode was February 4th, 1988. In 1988, James Burrows directed the first two episodes of the Judd Hirsch show, Dear John. Now, they would air later on in October, so this is way well before that. But if he was on from the beginning of that show and they were developing it, and there's a long pre-production process, maybe in terms of casting decisions and all those things, that maybe Jim Burrows was on that show and involved in some of that stuff before. Maybe that's why, because at the beginning there's like a 5-episode string here where he's not the director, and that's the only thing in terms of on his directorial resume that would kind of conflict at this time period. It's possible he just after six seasons, he just wanted to take some time off. But
do you see a difference in the actual presentation of the episode based on the different director?
Not a ton, and certainly with this one, Thomas LaFaro had been the assistant director on the show for years, and Thomas LaFaro has actually directed several episodes before this. He was basically Burrows, like, second in command in terms of, like, directing. So, he, like, if anybody would succeed him and kind of have the same eye or the same style, I think this guy would pretty much have, like, the same feel that Jim Burrows did.
See, I'm hearkening back to an interview I listened to not too long ago, but my memory is failing me as to who was being interviewed. But it was an actor / director. And whoever it was, again, I don't recall, but because I listened to so much of this stuff. But he was talking about being a regular on a series and then having a director who hadn't directed the show come in before and start to implement different rules on how we're going to go forward. And when that's the case, he said, you know, our attitude is we have our routine. We have our way of doing things. We don't need some guy who's never been here before to come in and tell us how to do things. They want to direct the episode a little differently. That's up to them, and that's up to the producers and the showrunner. Mm-hmm. But as far as how we're going to handle our reviews of the script and, you know, my characterization of my character and all of that, I really don't want to hear it from some guy who's just walked on.
Right.
And then he also, whoever it was, again, I don't remember, had directed some episodes of different shows. And he said, I always had to keep that in mind when I walked onto a show that was already established, because I didn't want to be the guy who was automatically turning the cast against him.
Right.
And I guess Thomas LaFaro is probably familiar enough with the cast from being, you know, working on the show anyway, mm-hmm. that it was probably a seamless thing. But I just found that an interesting thought, that it's very, very different from actors in a movie who, you know, you get an auteur as the director, and you know you're going to do it his way, or you're not going to do it.
Yeah, and also, I mean, like, the day-to-day operations are still being overseen by the creators, the Charles brothers, Glenn and Les, and Jim Burrows himself. And I think usually with half-hour sitcoms, that was usually the case. I mean, journeyman directors might come aboard, but they're really more or less executing the vision of the producers. If you've got more premiere television or an hour-long drama, I think the directors might have a little bit more flexibility and stuff like that. But even still, I think certainly in this era, like 80s, 90s television, I think a lot of it was just what the producers want is what the director was going to give them. They didn't have as much flexibility. If you really wanted that, then you needed to be directing features.
Exactly.
Today, that might not be the case just because of the way so much television is made now for less episodic and more streaming, but I don't know. But yeah, whoever that actor-director was would certainly be like, yeah, you're not coming in here to, like, change the way the wheel is made or anything. Like,
I know, I have a very close friend of mine that I went to school with, and I had him on Is It Yours a couple of months ago, and he's a director and a producer, and he was working on the show Manifest, and he directed, I think, 4 episodes in the final 10 that were done, and he directed quite a few before that. But there were, like, you know, there was a 10-episode block in that last bunch that came out. You know, there was still a significant number that he didn't direct. And, you know, if you watch them, you cannot tell that it's different directors in there. So I guarantee you they have certain meetings where they're all sitting down and talking about, you know, this is what we're looking for.
Right.
And this is the way we're looking to present it. And we need to have a certain continuity, because if you're going to come in here and do it in a totally different style, it's going to throw the viewers off.
Right.
And I would think even more so with a show like Cheers, or, you know, any sitcom, especially an ensemble sitcom, I think, you know, you really need to have that standard look to it.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, getting back to, I thought it was funny, and because we talked about how you were such a big fan of Taxi, and how mm-hmm. that in many ways was a show that preceded Cheers with a lot of the same behind-the-scenes talent. And I just thought it was interesting that Judd Hirsch's next project, this Dear John show, was...
Yeah, well, he probably already had a connection to Burroughs.
Burroughs, yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
It probably was a seamless thing for him to move on. And that show, I vaguely remember, I think it probably ran about 3 or 4 seasons.
I think it was 3 seasons. I think it was.
Good. Which is not, you know, it's not bad.
Yeah.
Not enough to go into syndication back in the day, but in nowadays, in the current world of streaming, I'm sure it's available somewhere.
Yeah. Anyway, all right, getting back to this one. Like I said, the original air date, February 4th, 1988, the episode Yacht of Fools. When a business meeting aboard the corporate yacht falls through, Evan Drake invites Sam to join him on the water for the weekend. Sam invites an attractive dental hygienist named Julie as his date, but Evan invites Rebecca along for Sam, as he still believes that Sam and Rebecca are a couple. Sam brings both women aboard, telling Evan that Julie is his sister. Once on board, Rebecca prepares to confess her true love to Evan, while Sam prepares to score with Julie. Both of their plans are dashed, however, when Evan makes a move on Julie. Sam comforts the emotionally distraught Rebecca, but just when it seems like she's ready to sleep with Sam, Evan interrupts them. He confesses that he almost slept with Julie, but he stopped out of respect for Sam. After this show of dignity, Rebecca is as in love with Evan as ever and casts Sam off. Sam returns to his original target, only to find that Julie's stateroom is now occupied by her and Lorenzo, the cabin boy. After everyone else goes to sleep, Sam tries one more time to make a pass at Rebecca. He tries to spoon with her whilst pretending to sleep. She takes his wandering hand and slams it in a drawer. All right, what did you think about this episode?
Genuinely enjoyed watching the episode, but I had to struggle a little to find some kind of, like, the subtext to kind of go into a little bit, because it felt like it was, you know, more or less a little superficial until you start thinking about it a little bit more with the, you know, to me, comparing the Rebecca-Sam relationship to the Sam-Diane relationship, which I'm still doing at this point. I'm still not quite, you know, totally away from that yet.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is I'm enjoying that it's different.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, this isn't the Sam-Diane relationship. It's not the, you know, are they going to fall in love thing. It's you know, what does go on them is between them is at least up to this point is purely lust and nothing more. Mm-hmm. And it's that combined with a power struggle. You know, who's going to have power over the other one? But I like the fact that they, you know, that they changed it around, and I still feel, like I said, I still feel the need to kind of compare it to some extent. I do think, if I'm remembering correctly, as the show went on, I didn't feel that as much. I didn't need to do that because I felt like it eventually just became a show unto itself again. Mm-hmm. Whereas at this point, I'm still kind of just feeling my way into the whole Rebecca's, you know, where does she fit into this ensemble? And I still think she's doing a great job with it. Don't get me wrong. You know, after 5 years of Diane, it's a little tougher to just kind of step into a new character.
I mean, the season isn't over yet, but so far in terms of the MVPs and like the Employee of the Month category that I've been keeping a score of, Rebecca is leading this season. So she's doing all right in terms of getting the best out of each episode. Now, for this particular episode, I think they're dangerously close to the line where her neuroses and infatuation with Evan, that she just can't confront him honestly, it's becoming close to being tedious and a little bit obnoxious. Like, how long can you keep her from just blurting out the truth and just telling this man how you feel? Like, how many obstacles are you going to throw in her way? Because then you're just left with this woman just crying on the bed, freaking out, which is funny. It's funny, but it's also like, okay, I think we need to see a little bit of forward momentum in this relationship.
Well, I think it's kind of farcical in mm-hmm. the way that they're doing it. So, you know, I don't believe that they're trying to be realistic in her attitude, because if they are, she's kind of a little almost psychotic. But I do find it humorous that she's, you know, okay, I'm done, I'm giving up on him, and then 2 seconds later, I love him more than ever before. You know, I find that very amusing, and it's slapstick in its own way.
Yeah.
But that's okay with me, and I you know, the fact that she's so hung up on him, I think is one of the things that keeps the romantic tension from between her and Sam from becoming similar to what Diane had.
We also, like, moments like this allow us to peek to... we're not even peeking behind this facade. She's just tearing the facade off of, like, the smart, successful, put-together businesswoman that she presented in the episode Home as the Sailor at the beginning of the season versus her crying on the bed just talking about how much she hates her life. Where she's like, all I have is my career and I don't even like it.
But she's still... You know, again, it goes back and forth. There's a little bit of a seesaw thing going on because she's still, you know, totally capable of standing up to Sam and you know, going toe-to-toe with him in a battle of the wits or whatever.
Right.
So you know, to me, there's a lot about her character that's compelling.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Okay, starting from the beginning, the teaser, Norm and Fraser are at the bar watching some kind of TV program that... Just the what I was able to piece, it sounds like it's a documentary or something about the history of the English language. There's something like that is on the TV, and Fraser is fascinated, and Norm is bored beyond belief. Enter Cliff, who he went to the video store. He says Vincent's Video Emporium, and he says he's come back with the best 1950s sci-fi that they could find. So, and he's like, they're all talking about like the kinds of like evil robots and aliens and all the kinds of like the stuff that they can expect. And even Fraser, surprisingly, seems to be really excited about this category. And they're like, really? You're into this stuff? And as they keep on presenting different movies that they could watch, Fraser is able to find the either political or literary allegory about the film and what its like true meaning is, and this just makes it less and less appealing to the guys. Like, first they're like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and Fraser brings up how this whole thing is a parallel to the communist Red Scare, and talks about McCarthyism, and this like goes back to like the way Diane used to ruin like all of these things that the guys were in, and they're just like, okay, we don't want to watch these if we have to think about it. And Frasier says, you know, the day the Earth stood still, and Frasier calls it a retelling of the life of Christ, and with Forbidden Planet, he's like a witty revamp of Shakespeare's The Tempest, with Robbie the robot standing in for Ariel. And after all of that, Norma's just like, forget it, we'll just watch this documentary about English on the TV.
But all of the things he says are true. You know what I mean? It's there isn't like they're stretching to come up with something. You know, the day the Earth stood still does have a Christ relationship to it, and Invasion of the Body Snatchers did have the communist overtones, and Forbidden Planet was a remake of The Tempest. So, you know, it's all the reality of it. And as a movie fan, I would love to sit there with Frasier and watch these movies, and yet I understand their problem, and it's probably why they wouldn't want to watch it with me.
They just want to zone out and not even think about it.
You know? They should have gotten the Creature from the Black Lagoon or them, you know? Yeah. It would have been much easier. But they actually took some of the more thought-provoking science fiction of the 1950s. Mm. But I did get a big kick out of that. I enjoyed that opening. Mm. Especially, you know, you consider this particular episode, I didn't break down the time-wise, but, you know, whatever, 80% of it is outside of the bar.
Yeah, actually, I even forgot that. Like, I thought once we get on the yacht, which is still in the middle of the first act, I forgot that we actually come back to the bar for two scenes. I was like, okay, that's the end for these guys. And then I was surprised to find out that they do come back, the whole birthday beers thing. But we'll come back to that one. So after the credits, Evan Drake is at the bar taking a call. Cliffy at his side is scoffing at the rich, acting like they're so much better. And Frasier says, you know, something like, you know, the studies say that the super affluent are more miserable than the working class. And Sam is like, oh, that's a crock. And Frasier's like, of course it is, but we have to cling to it. Interesting that, you know, Frasier puts himself, well, I mean, obviously Frasier is not a millionaire or billionaire, but interesting that he would put himself more in the company of Norman Cliff than of somebody like Evan Drake in this sense. But.
Yeah, in the right situation, Frasier certainly doesn't consider himself to be the common man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So Evan hangs up and he's like, a very important client and I were going to take the corporate yacht out for a little cruise, but he had to hurry home. And Sam goes, was it an illness in the family? And Evan goes, no, they overthrew his government. And Sam's like, trying to commiserate with him. He's like, oh man, on the weekend too? And I was like, yeah, you just can't make plans with dictators. And this is like one of those things that I mentioned on his first appearance. Like, Tom Skerritt is not an actor that I ever associate as a comedic actor. Just like the things that I recognize, everything from, you know, Alien to, actually, I grew up at the time in like the 90s watching him on Picket Fences, where he was the star of that show as the sheriff. But other stuff that he's always been in, what was the Stephen King one?
Dead Zone,
yeah. Thank you. I couldn't think of the yeah, he was in the Dead Zone too. But all these things that he's been a part of, and I just, like, you don't think of him as a comedian, but he's either he is really hilarious on the show, or just his presence brings out the humor in Sam or Rebecca for all these scenes.
I think it's twofold. First of all, I've always thought he's a particularly charismatic actor.
Yeah, he has something about
him. You're drawn to him when he's on the screen.
Yes, absolutely.
So he's got that going for him. And I think, unless I'm missing something, and I'm trying to, you know, to think of more than just this episode, but I think he always plays Evan Drake very, very straight. He's the straight man to the comedic actors.
Yes.
And he's letting the jokes bounce off him, and the humor that he's creating is almost his reaction, or lack thereof, to the absurdity that's going on around him.
He's
effectively the Bud Abbott of the of Cheers at this point.
Yeah, right. He rarely has the punchline unless the punchline is just his look of shock and silence. Like in his first episode, like there was this whole thing with Woody, had like they had to stall him, so Woody is telling him about this, like how they were giving the cows too much bran until like they were just like and you just see his look of like, why are you telling me this story? And it's just like,
yeah, there's a lot of deadpan. Yeah, that he does.
Yeah. But here, I mean, in this case, like, I like their little bit where he's like, this guy had to go had to hurry home. He's like, was it an illness? He's like, no, they overthrew his government. I'm like, that's a good bit. That's a good line. I like that one.
But and again, he gets the comic line there, but he doesn't say it like waiting for the punchline.
Right.
Or waiting for the reaction, rather.
Right.
You know, he's saying it in total seriousness, as if this is really happening.
Mm-hmm. So then he's like, you know, I got the yacht free. He's like, hey, Sam, what do you say? Come aboard. We'll make this a romantic weekend. And Sam's like, gee, I'm flattered. And Evan's like, no. He's like, bring Rebecca along. And Sam's like, why on earth would I do that? And at this point, Evan still thinks that they're a couple. And he's very just like, for the sake of the plot, when Sam is trying to explain, he's like, we're not doing it, he's like, dismisses it. He's like, I won't hear anything of it. I've got to leave. So he starts walking out. And then Carla has this brief exchange with him while he's putting his coat on. She's like, I am just an insignificant cog in the corporate wheel. And he goes, nice to meet you. <It's> like, and basically it's all this setup where she mentions that his Rolls Royce is being towed so he can, like, dash up the stairs. And how does she say? She's like, I love to see the rich, like, haul butt or something like that.
I thought that particular joke kind of fell a little flat, honestly.
Well, I'm surprised, like, that he would even hit, like, I guess the assumption is that he drove himself and just parked there. Like, why wouldn't he, like, he would have a driver. Like, that's like an established thing.
Yeah, like I said, it didn't take away from the episode to speak of, but I didn't, you know, the bit didn't make me laugh out loud or anything. It was just like, all right.
Yeah. Anyway, so Sam starts to, he's calling this girl Julie, this dental hygienist that he's been trying to court for a couple of days, and what he's like, you're not taking Miss Howe? He's like, no, I thought I'd have fun this weekend. And then we get to this part, and this might be my home run, but it's one of Cliffy's things. Just, this has nothing to do with the whole episode, but Cliffy is telling Norm, he's like, the defenders of the New England area during the Revolutionary War, he's like, were not, in fact, called the Minutemen, but because most of them were average under 3 feet tall, they were actually called the Minute Men. He does this whole thing like how people in the old days used to be shorter, and he kind of just adds almost like as an afterthought. He's like, you know, the Knights of the Round Table, genuine midgets.
Yeah, I have to say, I can't hold it in. That is my home run. I actually found myself rewinding that because I was laughing so hard at it.
For me, and it's a toss-up for me. It's, like, definitely out there. So, okay, we're both on the same. And it has nothing to do with the rest of the episode, but it's just, like, it's perfect. And it ends with Norm just looking at it. He's like, you're a very lonely man, aren't you, Cliff?
Yeah. But, so, you know, Cliff's little-known facts are usually amusing, mm-hmm. but I thought that was one of his best little-known facts ever.
The Minute Men. Yeah. So Sam invites Julie, but Rebecca actually comes in. She's like, I guess we'll be, you know, sailing together, because she actually saw Evan on the street and got the invite. So she insists on coming along. She's like, Evan sees me as this tough businesswoman in tailored suits. I want him to see me in sportswear. And then we get aboard the yacht, and there's, like, this lavish, you know, like, dinner spread and everything, and Julie, of course, like, you know, just to set up the kind of character she is, she's like, this yacht must have cost a fortune. I'm like, oh, yeah, duh. And she's like, well, did it?
You know, they definitely played up the Julie is very, very superficial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they started with that early, and then they kept going with it, which was... I thought it was a good move, because you never wanted to see Sam with her.
Right.
Because, you know, as beautiful as she was, right. She was not a likable person.
Right. Well, it also, it's a nice contrast with Rebecca, who, despite Rebecca's characterization in later seasons of the show, like, at this point, nothing about Rebecca's infatuation with Evan seems like it's based on his position of power. To her credit a little bit, and like what she kind of like explains to Sam later in this episode, it seems like she just like genuinely is enamored of this man, has the hots for him, and like we said, like just like Tom Skerritt's natural charisma, but like she knows about his family and his history, and it's not like she's just trying to you know, hook up with the boss or marry the boss so that she can just be like this, you know, trophy wife. That doesn't seem to be her agenda at this point. Whereas Julie is asking about the price of things and all these things. So it is a good contrast for them to kind of make Rebecca a little bit more sympathetic in this case. And yeah, I definitely think it kind of like sits, you know, like, yeah, Rebecca is the one to root for, perhaps both for Sam and for Evan. But it's also, they do a nice little job of, like, having, like, you know, Evan compliments Julie, and Sam, of course, is, you know, trying to hook up with her, and then Lorenzo compliments her beauty, and it's very obvious that nobody is paying attention to Rebecca, and she's just off in this corner drinking to herself.
Yeah, well, it's, what is the line there? And I thought it was one of the better lines also, is when she says something about having a personality. And Rebecca says, yeah, maybe you could get one of your own.
Yeah.
More the delivery of the line, you know, so I'm not doing it justice. But I thought Kirstie Alley did a real nice job with that, of just showing her distaste for Julie.
Yeah. And Evan starts to flirt with Julie, and he offers to take her on the captain's tour to show off his cabin. And he's like, are you sure your brother won't mind? And she's like, what brother? And of course. At the same time, Rebecca, you know, she's we actually have this moment where Rebecca and Sam actually seem very chummy. Like when she's talking about what her plan to like confess to, she's like, I'm gonna tell Evan Drake how I feel. I'm gonna seize the day. And Sam was like, well, hopefully while you're doing that, I'll be seizing Julie's headboard. And Rebecca kind of like laughs about it, and they almost like kind of like co-conspirators, kind of like chuckle together, like they're in on this secret. And it's a nice genuine moment of friendship that they have.
Yeah, and then she helps him do his hair.
there is
some camaraderie, because at least at this point in the episode, Sam's not trying to hit on her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and once they all split up, and Julie goes to her room, and Sam is going to go, and she's like, I have a headache, and he thinks she's saying that just for Evan's benefit. So Sam goes into his stateroom that he's sharing with Rebecca, and he starts, you know, doing his hair, getting ready and everything. And Rebecca's line, which was the other line, that was almost my home run, but she goes, I cannot believe I'm sharing a stateroom with you. I will never get any mirror time.
And what did she say? I can't believe you're doing your hair like that. Yeah. Like what? But like something somebody should be surfing on. I appreciate also that they spread around the good lines, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, I thought in my memory, like once they're on the boat, that's it for the we never go back to Cheers, but we do, because there's a scene when two couples come to the bar, and one of the guys is like, hey, it's my birthday. What's a good birthday drink? And Woody says, well, Sam always buys a free beer for someone on their birthday, and the guy's like, well, you know, it's my girlfriend's beer. It's my date's birthday too. You know, that's how we met. And the other couple is like, yeah, isn't that a coincidence? We all have the same birthday. That's how we all met. And Woody's just like, wow, this is crazy. So he's preparing to buy them all beer. And Norman Cliff flag him down and bring him over to the other side. And I think Norm calls him Mr. Hoof in Mouth or something like that. He's like, they're like, what do you think of the odds that all four of them have the same birthday? He's like, it must be astronomical. And Norm's like, don't you find it suspicious that they have the same birthday as me and Cliff? Rebecca's like, or Woody's like, wow, really? And like, you see Cliff pick up on it. He's like, yeah, we'll just take a free picture then.
But that, now that bit, and I don't know if it existed before then, but the first time I ever saw that was in an episode of I Love Lucy. When they make their trip to Italy, and she gets homesick, and she's upset because it's little Ricky's birthday, and they're not home for it. And a little boy comes over and is talking to her, and she starts saying about how upset she is, you know, how upset she is because of that. And he says, well, it's my birthday too. So she buys him like an ice cream or something. And then a couple of minutes later, he comes back with two of his friends. It's their birthdays too.
Nice.
So, you know, I guess that's...
It's an old
bit. For all I know, that's an old vaudeville bit that they used to do.
It's an old bit, but if you do it well, it's still funny.
Yep. Well, the whole thing that makes the actual joke itself is not particularly funny. The humor comes from Woody's reaction.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So back on the boat, Rebecca is going out there, and she sees Evan going into Julie's room, and the two of them, and she runs back to Sam. She goes, "Oh my God, I just saw Evan go into Julie's cabin, and my life has no meaning." So Sam goes out into the hall to confront Julie, and he goes, "You're throwing me over the rail for Drake." He's like, "Was it just because he has more money than me, more money than I'll ever hope to have, more money than most of America?" And he stops himself, and he's like, "I'm losing this argument, aren't I?" So he goes back in, and he's like, "I don't believe it." And Rebecca's like, "I believe it. She's nothing more than a classless bimbo." And he goes, "Hey, don't defend her to me." Like that's what he wanted. So Rebecca is miserable, and she basically talks about, she's like, in tears, and she spent 2 years pining over Evan Gregory Drake, as she explains. She's like waiting for him to call and making up excuses for why he didn't. And he's like, "Wow, you really are much worse off than me." And then she throws herself on the bed, and she's like, "I'm never going to have a husband. I'm never going to have babies. All I have is my stupid career, and I don't even like it." And the way Kirstie Alley delivers the lines with this high-pitched crying, I think I said it in another review, like, I don't know of another actress who is as good as, like, getting a line clearly enunciated so you can understand it perfectly, despite sounding like she is just, like, bawling or being reduced to, like, a nervous, blithering idiot. And somehow...
She has one of the best whines ever.
She does, and Kirstie Alley just nailed that.
Whining is generally an annoying thing. When she does it, it's funny.
Yeah, it's she just makes that happen, so it works somehow. So Sam starts to comfort her, and, you know, like, even they share a look, and he, you know, says, he's like, "Look, you're in an emotional state right now, and I don't want to take advantage of that." And he's like, "If you want me out of here, say the word." And she's like, "I'm not saying anything." So they're about to have their kiss when Evan knocks on the door and barges right in. And he's, "I need to get something off my chest." And Sam's like, "Go read a book and come back in 3 hours. So Evan says that he was going to sleep with Julie because he was lonely since his marriage broke up, but he felt guilty. And he explains, he's like, "Nothing happened out of respect for you." And then he leaves, and Sam is ready to get back and pick up right where they left off with Rebecca, but she is now even more in love with Evan because of, you know, that heartfelt confession and everything. She's like, "I can't make my move right now. It's the wrong time, but I'm going to go upstairs and sleep on the star." And Sam is like, "You're really going to leave me like this?" And she's like, "Go see Julie. That's who you want in the first place." He's like, "Oh, yeah." So he goes to knock. He's like, "Hey, is your bed's, you know, still free?" And we open the door, and we get shirtless Lorenzo, the other guy on the boat. He's like, "No, she's busy or something." And Sam finishes the scene just going, "I gotta stay off boats, man." Which calls back not only the fact that he sunk his boat between the seasons, but even if you go back to the beginning of season 5, he proposed to Diane on a boat, and that did not go well.
Yeah. It's when he made a dive in the water.
What did you think of that whole point when Evan kind of barged in and interrupted them?
I think that what they're doing is kind of going contrary to expectations there. Like, you know, the same way they made Julie somebody who was extremely superficial and you could dislike her personality, and then they even emphasized it further by having her jump into the sack with Lorenzo at the end. They're making Evan Drake somebody more and more that you can respect. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you top it off with, then you start saying, well, it's kind of okay that Rebecca likes him because he's a good guy. And, you know, he shows it by coming in and, you know, apologizing to Sam, and, you know, he's a man of honor.
Right.
So
right.
I kind of like that whole aspect of it, and using that to foil any, you know, lusty thoughts that Sam has is, you know, I think it's pretty clever.
I do too. I hadn't actually thought about it this way, but yeah, you're right, because our natural inclination as the audience, we want to see the leads together. Like, that's the whole reason of putting them together. We want to see Sam and Rebecca get together, whether it's right or not. That's kind of what we're hoping to see. So any obstacle to that, like another romantic character, like an Evan Drake, would be seen as the antagonist. But because we like him, and because, you know, he's not just charming, but we see he's actually a nice, decent guy in this respect, at least in this episode, the delaying of seeing Sam and like that interruption, coitus interruptus of, you know, Sam and Rebecca actually feels okay. It's not, you know, as devastating. We're like, okay, that kind of softens the blow because I wouldn't mind if she gets together with Evan. So,
and eventually they kind of turn it on its ear with, you know, when they introduce Robin Colcord,
right?
You know, it's like you have every reason to dislike him, and she doesn't know why.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's, you know, there are, let's just say they have clever writers.
Yeah. True enough.
I think they really, you know, I suspect that, you know, the Charles brothers really, you know, paid close attention to whatever character Bibles they had,
right,
and really worked with that information as they went forward. And the different writers who came in, you know, I'm sure there was some touching up of some scripts to say, no, you're not hitting this character right. You got to do this. You got to do that. Mm-hmm. But I think they really did a great job with that. I think as far as sitcoms go, this is one with a little bit more consistency than most. And there is, like I said, the subverting of expectations because you expect Evan to be somebody you're not going to like.
Right.
You know, you expect him to be a spoiled rich guy who just expects to get whatever he wants. And he's not really that. He's more of a regular guy.
Yeah. And I wonder if the script for this one was just like 3 minutes too short, because it feels like Sam's line, "I gotta stay off boats," would have been the last line and would have been the finale to the episode. But instead we get two more scenes. We go back to the bar and Carla comes in and she finds out from Woody that he was conned in this whole thing into giving away free beers for the birthday. But once she finds out that Norman Cliff were involved, then she goes nuts. She's like, "You do not stiff this bar. She's like, you guys should know better." And she starts to chase them around, and they're like, there's a face-off where they're keeping the bar between them, and Norm's like, "Let's split up." And Cliffy's like, "No, she's going to chase me." And Norm's like, "Exactly." And they start running, and as she's chasing them, they're just like throwing dollar bills and change back at her, because she's like, "Wait, what about the tip?" And they just throw change down the stairs as they're running. So then right after that, we get the one last scene back on the boat, which is Rebecca comes back into the stateroom after Sam appears to be sleeping and snoring. And as she's climbing back into bed, he's still snoring, but his eyes pop open. He's awake, and he kind of rolls over pretending that he's still asleep, and she brushes his hand aside, and he tries it again. And as he's getting closer and closer, she takes his hand, pulls it forward, and then, like, she's opening the drawer, and then we cut to black, and you just hear the sound of the drawer slamming and him screaming. So
they did feel a little bit like filler.
Yeah.
Neither one was a bad scene, you know, so it's not like, oh, you know, they wasted our time or whatever. But yeah, it felt like the story was already done, and they're just throwing some extra stuff in there. The scene with Carla, I thought the whole key to that was when Norm wanted to split up.
Yeah.
Because otherwise that really would have felt like it was just filler.
But right.
That moment added enough humor to it to make it worthwhile.
He's throwing Cliff to the the wolf in this case, not the literal wolf, but the Carla wolf. Yeah.
And then the scene with Rebecca, it was all right. You know, it was amusing. You know, was it necessary? No, but it made me smile. Mm-hmm. What it's worth.
Yeah. A fun episode overall, and I just think like the episodes with Evan Drake, and it's more just to do with like his character and the Tom Skerritt persona, what he brings into it, just kind of elevate some of those episodes that might be overall kind of okay episodes. I think he makes them better than average.
Agreed.
So yeah, that's kind of fun.
Well, it's one of the pleasures of this show. It needs to be funny and it needs to be well written, but there is an element on this show that part of the enjoyment is the quality of the actors and the way you just kind of gravitate to them. And that's where, like, to me, Tom Skerritt added a lot, because he's got a certain charisma to himself that, you know, he's not being overshadowed by the other ones, even though he's just, you know, an occasional guest star.
Right.
And everybody in the show just kind of finds their own way, to the point where this, you know, this really is a true ensemble show, even though Ted Danson and the female lead are the primary characters. But everybody gets their moments in the sun, and that's probably the biggest key to this show, is it's not just focusing on Sam.
Yeah. We'll get back to that when we talk about the Employee of the Week. But before that, for Norm's tab, since he outed himself when they come back in, and he mentions, or they said that, what is it, what he said, but like he got 5 rounds out of the free beers. So I gave Norm credit for 9 beers, this one. I whether they were pitchers or beers, they said got 5 rounds. I said that's 5 beers. I can't, you know, tabulate how much he might have gotten out of a pitcher, but we'll say he got 9 beers this episode, which brings him up to 549 for the series so far. Who was your Employee of the Week or your MVP?
I had a little bit of a tough time with that because usually I find myself gravitating to whoever gave the funniest performance.
Mm-hmm.
And I've already gone out of my way to say that Tom Skerritt doesn't give the funny performance. He's kind of the glue that carries the funny. But he was my Employee of the Week. I just thought he carried, you know, this episode kind of all goes around him and his machinations and how he's dealing with things. I kind of felt like he was the pivotal person in it, so I gave it to him.
I agree. I had the same thing. And again, it's not necessarily because he had the best lines, but just the presence that the character brings and like the way he shakes things up and just being kind of the linchpin for this episode. My runner-up would be Sam. Sam was great in this episode. And Rebecca, for her part, was funny too. I could have given it to Sam just for being funnier, but I just think, yeah, Evan Drake for just what he does in this episode and what I just said before is that he elevates every episode that he's in. So, and for home run, for the home runs, we already said it so much, but it's the whole Cliff's whole spiel about the minute men. That's not good.
You know, I mean, I've been hearing about the minute men since I was, I don't know, in second grade, and that thought never occurred to me. The minute men.
So
they're taking something, you know, you've heard your whole life and just spinning it in a way where it's hilarious. And then taking it further with the Knights of the Round Table. it was to me, that was just so clever that I'm laughing as I'm talking now.
I know, it's so good. My runner up would have been would Sam is like you. It's like you're choosing Evan Drake just because of how rich he is, and he's like describing all the money that he has, and he's like, I'm losing this argument, aren't I? He's like, so, all right, well, Paul, thank you very much for coming back on Cheers Cast. I love talking to you about this show. Where else can folks hear you if they want to hear more from you?
Basically, 2 podcasts at the moment: Back to the Bins and Is It Yours, where we review comic books on Back to the Bins. We review movies on Is It Yours. We've now, well, the final episodes haven't come out yet, but we've wrapped up recording at least on The Village People, which is our retrospective episode by episode review of the show The Prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not sure what we're going to do next as far as that goes with that particular crew. We've already done Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Star Trek the Animated Series, Firefly, and now we've done The Prisoners. So I don't know what else we're going to do, but I'm sure we enjoy each other's company too much. So we'll do something else down the line.
Very cool, very cool. I'm not like pitching like, hey, you should do this, but I just remind like I've the last week I rewatched just on my own time the HBO miniseries From the Earth to the Moon, which was a Tom Hanks produced series about just like the whole the 1960s and 70s, like the whole NASA space program, basically. Mm-hmm. Starting with Kennedy saying we will go to the moon by the end of the decade and visiting through all of the Mercury and Gemini and Apollo missions, and just a really, really great series. I try to watch it every couple of years, and I think it's often forgotten. It kind of falls down the rabbit hole because most people think of like Tom Hanks series, they think of Band of Brothers, which is the one that he and Spielberg did after Saving Private Ryan, but the one that he did after Apollo 13, I think, is almost just as compelling. Just a really fun show.
I personally actually even enjoyed it more.
Yeah, and it's yeah. So I highly recommend to anybody if you just like good television, if you got the Max app or whatever HBO is called now, check out From the Earth to the Moon. It's good, some good television there. A lot of fun, like seeing some cast members, like people that you like recognize, like, oh man, he was in that, like all of the people who played the astronauts, like Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad. Everybody knows him. He plays Buzz Aldrin in an episode.
So. Oh, I always get a kick out of, you know, him on Seinfeld as the
dentist. Yeah, Tim Watley, the dentist.
Tim Watley, yeah. But it, you know, it's it, I don't remember what might have been. Zaki Hassan was talking about him and saying he was watching like Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, I'm watching this now and saying, did they have any idea when they were filming that this that he was going to become like one of the actors of his generation?
It's
which
amazing.
Which he has become.
Yeah, and I've heard in like it's like he did voice work for some weird obscure, like there was a Clerks animated series that ran for 6 episodes. I don't know if you remember that. I think only 2 of them ever aired on television. But he did like voice work for that. But yeah, like, it's funny, like when I think of him, despite all of like the amazing work he put into Breaking Bad and everything that he has done, for me, when I think of Bryan Cranston, it's one line from the show Malcolm in the Middle. And I didn't watch that show very often, but I must have watched maybe like a season or something. But he chops down this tree in their front yard. They have this unsightly tree, and he cuts it down like with just like a chopper. And he's talking to the kids. He's like, 1,000 years to grow and 10 minutes to cut down. There's got to be a metaphor in there somewhere. I'm just like, that's a funny line. I like that line. So for some reason, that's what I think of Bryan Cranston, not Breaking Bad or anything else.
Well, I've said on numerous occasions, Breaking Bad, in my opinion, is the single best dramatic series I've ever watched.
Mm-hmm. Can't argue that. So
maybe we'll do Breaking Bad. I don't know.
It's an emotional gut punch. Like, that was a show that I could never binge watch. I could only, like, I could watch maybe 2 episodes, and then I'm like, I need to take a shower. I need to do something. I need to clean my mind. I was like, I can't wallow in this that often. Yeah, I love that show. I think it's criminal that Giancarlo Esposito didn't win an Emmy for playing Gus, but the fact that he lost to Jesse, I'm like, yeah, okay, that's all right. But, God, Giancarlo Esposito was so magnificent in that.
Well, for what it's worth, we were at Tampa Bay Comic Con this week, and I was at one point about 4 feet from Giancarlo Esposito.
Nice.
Didn't have a chance to address him at all, but I was right by him.
Nice. Very cool. And I've been a fan of his since The Usual Suspects. He had actually a small role in The Usual Suspects.
Oh, wow. I didn't even realize that. I came to know him in Breaking Bad.
Anyway. Thank you again, Paul. Thanks for being on the show. Thanks for coming back. Thanks to all of you out there who listen to Cheerscast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. This show is patronized by the Right On Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of the Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FW Podcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
I'm just so disappointed in him.
Disappointed? Think how I feel. I mean, he's in there boinking my sister.
I am never gonna have a husband or babies or a family. All I have is my stupid career, and I don't even like it.